to be back looking at a topic that is extremely important, the question of atheism, whether or not we should listen to the many voices these days who are telling us that it's actually a mistake to even believe in God. So we decided to address the topic, why I am not an atheist. We did quite a bit last time. Today I had a presentation that was going to show up here, but there's an adapter that's missing. So I'll be showing the presentation to myself. Sorry about that, but I will read some of the quotes. I was going to display them so that you can really believe that I'm not making this stuff up. But you're going to have to take my word for it for now, and then look up these quotes that I'll be reading. I normally don't like reading quotes. I prefer to just speak. But sometimes, given a topic that is as controversial as the one we are looking at today, I think it's important that we verify the facts that are being presented, because that's the issue that we'll be addressing. And it's good to see some of my friends here who are atheists. Welcome so much. You are brave to be coming into a church to hear a topic like this. But we are friendly people here. So if there's anybody else here who is an atheist, please know that you are more than welcome. And we look forward to a time of discussion where you can ask any question that you have about what I'll be saying tonight. So what I want to do is to review what we did last time briefly, and then look at why I am a Christian, why I am not an atheist today, looking at why I'm a Christian, but with a review of what we did last time. And I'll begin by giving you a definition of what it means to be an atheist, what atheism really is. An atheist is a person who maintains that there is no God. That is, that the sentence, God exists, expresses a false proposition. So if you're an atheist and you hear me say God exists, you would think that what I'm saying is false, is not true. That is what it means to be an atheist. And for you to become an atheist, it's actually very, very easy. You just have to repeat this confession. This is a confession of faith that atheists have to repeat to become atheists. Here it goes. There is one reality, the natural world, and physics is its prophet. That's all you have to repeat. There is one reality, the natural world, and physics is its prophet. These are not my words. These are the words of a philosopher named Dallas Willard. He was obviously trying to copy what Muslims say for people who are trying to or considering Islam. We also said that if you hold to that creed, if you believe that only the physical universe exists, there are several things you are not entitled to. There are several things you have to give up if you hold to the belief that the universe, the physical universe alone exists. What you are saying, let's first of all state the things that you are committed to. You are committed to the existence of matter, energy, time, space, and the material processes that take place within matter and energy. That's what you are committed to. What is left out of that picture are things like consciousness, the fact that you and I are right now aware of what I'm talking about, and you can actually begin to process it. That awareness is called consciousness, and it is not a part of the physical universe. If we limit the physical universe to matter plus time plus energy, space, and the material processes that take place within matter, if that's what you're committed to, you lose consciousness. You also cannot be able to explain anything about the nature or the origin of life. You also lose meaning. There is no such thing as meaning or purpose unless you create meaning or purpose for your own existence. There is no preset reason or purpose or meaning for why you are here. You have to make that up yourself, either individually or within a group. There is no such thing as meaning or purpose. We also said that you lose objective morality. There's no such thing as right and wrong, except what you and I decide is right or wrong. And if that's how we go about choosing what is right and wrong, then in the end we find out that anything really goes. And then there's no questions such as origin, where did we come from, destiny, where are we going, and interestingly enough, reason, the laws of logic, are not part of that fabric of the universe if you limit your understanding of the universe to only the physical universe. If you do that, you also lose reason because it's an immaterial essence. So those are things that you're not entitled to if you are an atheist tonight. Let me read a quote by a scientist called Sir Peter Medawar, who was a very, very well-respected scientist from the UK, a Nobel laureate, actually. Here's what he said in a book called Advice to a Young Scientist. There is no quicker way for a scientist to bring discredit upon himself and upon his profession than roundly to declare that science knows or soon will know the answers to all questions worth asking, and questions which do not admit a scientific answer are in some way non-questions or pseudo-questions that only simpletons ask and only the gullible profess to be able to answer. Do you hear what he's saying? That if you really want to discredit yourself and to show that you really don't know what you're talking about as a scientist or as an atheist, the quickest way to do that is to hold to the creed that science can or will answer all the important questions that can ever be asked. If you hold to that creed, and if you think that people who ask these type of questions or who think they have answers to these kinds of questions, if you think that those types of people are gullible, they are simpletons, you are discrediting yourself as a scientist. He goes on to say this: the existence of a limit to science is made clear by its inability to answer childlike elementary questions having to do with first and last things. Questions such as, how did everything begin? What are we all here for? What is the point of living? Those questions are very important. They are the questions that drive philosophy, history. And yet, if you hold to them scientific materialism, which most atheists hold today, you have no right to ask those questions and to think, Peter Medawar says, and to think that those who ask those type of questions are simpletons or gullible is to discredit yourself. Let me read you one more. Like I said, I don't really like doing this. I prefer to just walk around and speak. But let me read this because, by the way, Peter Medawar was not a Christian. He was not saying that from a Christian perspective. He was just being honest. And here's another statement from a man called Tom Holland, a very respected historian also from the UK. He wrote an article on September 14, not too long ago, and the article is entitled this way: Why I Was Wrong About Christianity. Why I Was Wrong About Christianity. And then he goes on to say that he was educated through the university system where he was taught that Christianity and religion and all that, they have the only things they have done is cause wars and problems all over the world throughout history. And so the best thing to do if you are a true intellectual is to set them aside. But then he sees that from studying that material himself, he has come to the conclusion that that's the wrong way of thinking about history and about the contribution of Christianity to history. Here's what he writes. Today, even as belief in God fades across the West, the countries that were once collectively known as Christendom continue to bear the stamp of the 2-millennia-old revolution that Christianity represents. It is the principal reason why, by and large, most of us who live in post-Christian societies still take for granted that it is nobler to suffer than to inflict suffering. It is why we generally assume that every human life is of equal value. In my morals and ethics, I have learned to accept that I am not Greek or Roman at all, but thoroughly and proudly Christian. It's another honest person. You can find that article online, Why I Was Wrong About Christianity, by Tom Holland. So if you really want to be fair to the historical process, it is impossible to have what we have today in terms of morals if you take the Bible out, especially in terms of caring for the weak. Because the only reason the world came to believe that you and I are equal as human beings, that we were all created equal as human beings, is because they believed that we were all made in the image of God. You take the image of God out of the equation, and there's nothing that makes us equal as human beings. And that's what he's saying here, that if you take the biblical teaching out of the picture, what you are left with is something that is truly, truly dangerous. One more person, Professor John Gray, who is a professor of European thought, another very, very respected intellectual giant, and also an atheist. Here's what he says. Humanists insist that by using our knowledge, we can control our environment and flourish as never before. In affirming this, they renew one of Christianity's most dubious promises, that salvation is open to all. The humanist belief in progress is only a secular version of this Christian faith. In the world shown us by Darwin, there is nothing that can be called progress. The idea of humanity taking charge of its destiny makes sense only if we ascribe consciousness and purpose to the species. But Darwin's discovery was that species are only currents in the drift of genes. The idea that humanity can shape its future assumes that it is exempt from this truth. These are powerful, powerful words from a leading atheist. And what he's telling us is this, that what humanists have done today is that they have taken Christianity and taken God out of the picture, and they want to retain what Christianity teaches without the foundation for it. And he says it is not going to work. So why am I not an atheist? Because I do believe that it's not possible to explain why there's such a thing as right and wrong, the objectivity of morality, right and wrong, that do not depend on what you and I decide. Those are just given as part of the universe. We find ourselves existing in a universe that comes packaged with rules of behavior, do's and don'ts, that you and I did not invent. And there is no way to explain that if there's no moral lawgiver who is the source of the universe and who made us in his image, so we can be able to comprehend that realm that is different, separate from us. We can be able to comprehend it and apply it to each other as human beings in terms of right and wrong, which we all feel quite strongly. Even those who deny right and wrong eventually get to the point where they have to revert to right and wrong to make sense of their own existence, especially when something unjust is done to them. And so we are listening to these people here who are leading giants of our time, and they are not pastors. They're not speaking from a Christian perspective. And I wish I could display this for you so you could see even their faces. And I do have the pictures right there of the people who say these things and the names and all that. If you want to sources for these quotes, let me know. I can give them to you afterwards. But these are people who are honest. If you are really going to be a consistent atheist, life becomes extremely miserable. And that's why somebody like Bertrand Russell, who was one of the most respected philosopher mathematician of the last century, he wrote an article in which he said that you have to realize that all the achievements, I could read the quote, I don't want to read too many quotes, but all the achievements of the human age, everything that we have ever achieved is all going to amount to nothing in the end. And he said, you have to build your life on that firm foundation of unyielding despair. And that's the only way your soul can find its true habitation, once you're honest with yourself about what life really is about. So I am not an atheist for all those reasons. And one is morality, the other one was the origin of the universe. This universe began to exist. And if it began to exist, it's not possible to have something coming out of nothing. And given its complexity, the cause of the universe must be a being or an entity that is eternal, because it created time. It also must be an entity that is extremely powerful given the vastness of the universe. It must be immaterial or a spirit because it created space. It existed outside space. It also must be extremely intelligent given the complexity of the universe, and it must be personal because they could make decisions. And all these attributes are the same attributes that have been given to God ever since the time of Aristotle. In our written history, that's what people have meant by the word God, by the title God. So the origin and complexity of the universe, the existence of the objectivity, or the objectivity of morality, and I could give you other reasons and other quotes and all that, but I think that would be a very good starting point for us, especially when it comes to the Q&A section. So let's ask this question now. Why then am I a Christian? Those who have been here before, you have heard me say this before, that of all the worldviews in existence, because every now and then we get asked this question, is it not possible that you have missed a religion or some worldview out there that is more coherent, that is better put together, that account for reality better than Christianity? Why did you settle? How can you be so sure that Christianity is true when you haven't looked at everything out there? That sounds like a very daunting question, but the answer to it is very easy. Because all the worldviews in existence, all of them, can be grouped under three categories, depending on what they say about just two things, on what they say about God and the universe. Depending on what a worldview says about God and the universe, it falls under one of three categories. To the one extreme, we have the view that only the physical universe exists. That's what we've been looking at. That's atheism, or it's called naturalism in the literature. Only the universe exists. God doesn't exist. On the other extreme, we have the view that the other extreme is only God exists. So only the physical universe, only God exists. Now that sounds very strange when you say something like that in our context. But there are billions of people today who hold to that view that only one thing exists, only God exists, nothing else. Then you ask them the question, what about all the other things that I see, like people and trees and cars and all that? What are all these things? And what they tell you is this: if you can learn how to meditate properly, you can be able to see that everything in the end is all one inclusive whole. The reason you don't know that is because you haven't learned how to meditate so that you can lose your self-consciousness. You join the all, and then everything you see, everything becomes one. This is why you get the jokes. A joke like maybe the man, you had the joke about the guy who walked into a hot dog vendor and said to the hot dog vendor, "Make me one with everything." Some of you will get that in the middle of the night, right? Make me one with everything. That's a Hindu who walked to a hot dog vendor and said, "Make me one with everything," because they believe everything is one. And the answer would have been, you already are. You are one with everything. But that's the other extreme. So only the physical universe, only God. In the middle, we have the view that both God and the universe exist. They both exist. God is eternal and uncaused, and the universe was created by God. And under that, we only have three serious competitors. We have Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. That's all we have under that. So it's not difficult to do an evaluation of these different worldviews without having to be an expert in all of them. All you have to know is this: what do they believe about God and the universe? If they believe both God and the universe exist, then they fall in the category called theism, in the middle. If the person says they believe only God exists, that view is usually called monism in the literature. And Hinduism and Buddhism, those kinds of religions, hold to that view. Although in the end, the final analysis, Buddhism is an atheistic religion. That's why the view is called monism, from monos, meaning one. So everything is one. So there are many different versions of monism under that. Then we have the view, only the physical universe exists. And that's usually called naturalism in the literature. And there are so many different expressions of it, including humanism that we just looked at here, critiqued a little bit. So the reason, we don't have the time, obviously, to look at all these different views. So let me just cut to the chase and tell you why it is that I'm a Christian. And there's a running joke in Sunday school that the answer to every question is what? Jesus, right? Any question you ask in Sunday school, the answer is Jesus, right? Right now, that answer is a good one for me because he really is the reason I am a Christian. It's because of Jesus. And there are several reasons for that. I'm going to do this very quickly so that we can have as much time for Q&A as possible and make this a time of discussion. The reason for that is when I look at what Jesus teaches about myself and about the world that I live in, I find that they match. The teaching matches perfectly. It matches perfectly. What he taught, what he believed about us as human beings, and my own experience. Thank you. In my own experience, there is a perfect match between the two. Let me give you a really good example. He described your condition and my condition as rebellion against God. That is the real problem that we face. We all have to acknowledge as human beings, there's a serious issue. There's a serious problem with the world. There's a serious problem with the world today. There is no worldview that doesn't take that seriously. If it doesn't take it seriously, it is not worth considering at all because we all acknowledge that we are involved in some type of a serious struggle. The question is, what is the source or the cause of this struggle? How did it come about? And Jesus said, the real problem with you and me is that we have sinned against God. We have rebelled against God. That is the real problem that you and I face today. And when we look at our experience in our life, we see that his teaching matches exactly what he taught. But before we do that, let me ask you this question. What do you think these other views, these other positions, for example, monism, how do they explain our condition? What is our real problem? What's our issue? The answer they give is this. Our main problem is not sin and rebellion. Our main problem is ignorance. And what we need is enlightenment. Did you get that? Our real problem is ignorance. And if we were to be enlightened, that problem would be solved. Here is where that explanation breaks down. Most of the time, almost 90% of the time, if not more, we know exactly what we're supposed to be doing, what is right and what is wrong. We know what is right and what's wrong. We just choose to do what is wrong over and over again. It has nothing to do with ignorance. We know exactly what we should be doing. We just choose to do the opposite. Let me give you a good example. You probably heard me say this before. I was invited to speak at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, in the headquarters in Atlanta, which is a government facility over there and very, very well protected. They sent me a questionnaire to fill out, a form that thick. It took me a long time to fill it out because they wanted to know everything about me, every address I've ever had, every phone number that I have ever had, every country I've ever visited, and who I visited, and why, and when, and how long I stayed. They asked me when I was born, where I was born, obviously. They almost asked me why I was born. So I'm filling this thing out, and I finish. I send it back in. It took them a couple of weeks to go through it and to do background checks and all that, just so I could go there and speak for 45 minutes and leave. When I got there with a colleague of mine from the U.S., we got to the gate, and they told us where to park the car. But before we parked it, they checked everything under the car. They took out the mask, the visor. They opened the hood, everything. They checked everywhere in the car. And then they did the same thing with us. And they gave us a badge. They said, you cannot go anywhere by yourself in this whole place. There has to be somebody with you the whole time. Even in the bathroom, I had a bodyguard. For the first time in my life, I had a bodyguard there. And then when I spoke to them, I told them, you have made my work really easy. You know why? Because I came here to convince you that human beings are sinful. Let me ask you this. Why would they go to all that trouble to verify who I am if they didn't already believe that human beings are sinful? They also knew that my main problem was not going to be ignorance. Their fear that I might actually know something that I'm not supposed to know. That was the main fear that they have. And that's what you and I operate with on a daily basis. From the lock on your front door, when you lock the door at night, you are doing that against somebody who will know exactly how to go get into your house if they wanted to attack you. That's why you lock it. You are not doing that for somebody who is ignorant. It's for somebody who knows exactly what they are doing. D.L. Moody said this, very famous preacher of the 1800s. He said this, that if a young man is stealing nuts and bolts along the railway line, and you take him to college and educate him, by the time he's done with his college education, he'll be able to steal the whole railway line. And C.S. Lewis put it this way, education by itself seems to create only clever devils. That's what it does. You hear over and over again, for example, when somebody breaks down into a gas station and steals a few things over there, what are we told? That this is an uneducated person. If they could be educated, they would be able to, they would have some manners, they would not be doing this kind of thing. What do we say when our most educated luminaries in the world bankrupt our financial systems? What do we say then? Jesus' description that what you and I have, our main problem for which we need help, is rebellion against God. We prove him right every waking moment of our day. From a little child's heartfelt cry, that's not fair. We know exactly why the child would say something like that, because they can see that what we are doing is something that we ought not to be doing. We know better. And think of it this way. Our parents and our teachers spend the first few years of our lives teaching us how to say and write our own names. And then we spend the rest of our lives traveling around with picture IDs to prove that the names we call ourselves are really our names. We know exactly what we are like. We just choose to make accommodation for sin over and over again. But this is sin against a holy God. And you and I are separated from God. And that's why Jesus came, to bridge that gap. So his diagnosis of the human condition was spot on, was right on. We have rebelled against God. And by the way, what do atheists say is our main problem if it is not sin? Hopefully our friends will tell us here. But let me say this ahead of time. Atheism doesn't even have the resources to raise that question, let alone begin to answer it. So, in my opinion, atheism is actually the most impoverished worldview anybody can ever hold. It's actually better to be something else other than atheism. But like I said, I do have very, very close friends who are atheists. My professors in the U.S., I'm just finishing my dissertation, and my supervisors, they are all atheists. My classmates, I spend a lot of time with atheists. They are really good, fun people, good friends. All right, so that's number one, his diagnosis of the human condition. Number two, he didn't just diagnose the human condition, he also did something. Jesus did something about it. He came to correct the problem that separated you and me from God, and he offers that as a gift, and we all now have the opportunity to either accept it or reject it. Nobody can accept it for you. I love my wife who is here and my son. I love them, my other son, my family, more than I love anybody else in this world. But I cannot love God on their behalf. I can pray for them, which I do very regularly, but eventually they will have to make that decision themselves, and thank God they have made a decision for themselves to follow God. So it's a decision that you and I have to make because the price has already been paid. Here was the main problem. You are faced with a holy God who is completely holy and just and perfect, and you have sinful human beings. There is no way the two can ever get together. There's no way that can happen at all. Something had to be paid because God is completely just. And if he is completely just, then the fact that you and I have broken his law had to be satisfied. How was that going to be done? God did it in a marvelous way. He satisfied God's justice and God's love both at the same time through the death of Christ on the cross. God's love and God's justice were both manifested at the same time on the cross of Jesus Christ. So he did something that no other religion ever teaches or even ever knows, because in almost every other view you'll find that what you have to do is to do a lot of good things, and if your good things outweigh your bad things, you'll be fine in the end. Here is a problem. If we leave things like that, justice is still not met because you are coming in with things that still need forgiveness. That does not take care of the problem at all. But God did it. It's such a marvelous, marvelous solution to the human condition, that God, in his wisdom, sent Jesus to die in your place and in my place. But there's this issue, this small issue, called the question of choice. What are you going to do with what God has done for you? That's a decision that you must make. The Bible says this in John chapter 7, verse 17, that if you choose to do God's will, you will find out whether what Jesus came to do really came to God from God or not. That issue, if you choose to do it, if you do choose to follow God, you will find out whether what he's saying is true or not. There's that issue of choice. So if you are here and you are resisting God, you've resisted God for a long, long time, ask yourself this question and ask it very honestly. Would you like it to be the case that God really exists? Would you like it to be the case that God exists? Or are you only, if you read the Bible, you are only reading it to see what you can distort to show that this is not a reliable guide to God? That's a game that we play over and over again. So Jesus solved that problem. And the final thing that I want to mention about him, why I'm a Christian, is this. His influence or his impact on the world, his influence in the world, which continues to this day. Many scholars, many philosophers have recognized, including a famous philosopher called Anthony Flew, that the teachings of Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, is the best, the greatest treatise ever given on moral living, how to be moral beings. There is no book, no philosopher, nobody has given us a system of morality that is superior to what Jesus gave. And even Mahatma Gandhi carried in his pocket, everywhere he went, a copy of the Sermon on the Mount to remind himself to become more and more like Jesus, which is a very weird thing to do because he wasn't a Christian, but he carried that teaching in his pocket everywhere he went for that very reason. And so when I read atheists writing about how ignorant believers are, Christians are, how silly it is to believe in God, I know that I am dealing with a person who has given leave of his faculties of mind to be able to study and find out what history truly really says about who God is. That is something that I find many times frustrating, and I know this person that I'm dealing with right now really doesn't want to hear the truth. All they are looking for is a verbal slugfest, a fight of words which I'm not ready to engage in. But for somebody who is truly looking for the truth and who is looking at the issues being raised, there are difficult issues, very legitimate questions. The problem of evil for me for a long time was what kept me from becoming a Christian. I understand that. For somebody who is serious and is asking serious, genuine questions, I will spend that the time, even if it's the whole night, and which I have done with people, when we are looking at those kinds of issues, when the question is being asked by a person who is really looking for the truth, just as I am. But for fights, as many, especially, I see some young people in the audience here. Let me warn you of this. You go on the internet and you begin piling up reasons why you should not believe in God, and you're a Christian, you're considering becoming a Christian. You just pile up. And in the end, you come out and say, because of all these reasons, all these problems in the Bible, for example, or the wars of Christianity and all that, because of all those problems, I can't be a Christian. When you do that, you are doing yourself a great, great disservice. Because ideas have spiritual power, and you can inoculate yourself from hearing the truth based on what you are allowing your mind to dwell on over and over again. So what is the solution? What are you supposed to do? Here's what I would recommend, and what I recommend to anybody who asks me these type of questions. Take one of those issues at a time. Take them at a time. Take, for example, the problem of evil, and get the best defense of that problem from an atheistic perspective, and study it. Make sure you understand exactly what the problem of evil is. What is that issue? And then take the next step. Take the best response that has been given to that particular problem from a Christian perspective, and then make up your mind with the facts. But if you're just doing one side and just piling things up, you are not truly committed to finding out what is true and what is right, and you're going to mess yourself up big time. Because God has done everything that He needs to do to be able to unite you and me by sending His Son, Jesus Christ. I love my son, like I said, and I have a lot of friends, many friends who are not believers. But let me tell you this, there is nothing in this world that would lead me to sacrifice either one of my boys for your sake. If you depend on me sacrificing my son, you're going to hell. There's no other way to put it. But you know what? God was willing to sacrifice His Son on your behalf. And then Jesus asked this question, who do you say that I am? That is the most important question any human being will ever have to deal with. But if you respond to what God has given you and you begin to walk with God, you will see the reality that He offers to us through His Word, that it is really not a joke, that God is really there and He cares for you. He cares for each one of us. That is why I am not an atheist, because God has already revealed Himself in the person of Jesus Christ, and we have many other reasons to think that atheism, the view that only the physical universe exists, is not accurate, it's not true. But what God has offered is verifiable and understandable to anybody who comes to it with an open mind. And then the question becomes very easy. What do you want? That's just what Jesus asked. That's the first question Jesus asked in the Gospel of John. What do you want? What are you looking for? Because let me tell you this. If you are determined to walk away from God, to hide from God, He will let you do it. God has set up things in such a way that if you don't want to find God, you don't have to. That's the way this universe is set up. But praise God, if you do want to find God, you will. Praise God.